well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Jim Wallace of the Gun Owners Action League here in just a minute or two. You know, it was late last summer, that the Massachusetts House of Representatives introduced a bill that Jim described as the Lawful Citizens Imprisonment Act. And there were all kinds of shenanigans that took place in the House in terms of passing that bill. And then the Senate said, listen, we're not going to consider this. We have our own agenda. But the Senate played some games of its own in passing a gun control bill that the House disagreed with. So the House and Senate have appointed members to make up a conference committee. And now they are meeting behind closed doors to figure out what the final language of this gun control bill is going to look like. When it emerges from this conference committee, it'll go back to the House and Senate for a straight up or down vote. No chance to amend the bill. No chance for the public to weigh in. It'll just be yay or nay. And then, given the likelihood that it's going to be a yay, the bill will then go to Governor Maura Healey for her approval. So the folks at the Gun Owners Action League are objecting not only to the substance of these proposed bills, both the Senate and the House version, but they're also objecting to the process by which this atrocity has come to pass. And here to talk about it again, Jim Wallace of the Gun Owners Action League. Take a look and a listen. Jim, thanks so much for coming on the program, sir. It's good to see you again.
As always, you know, something's happening here in Massachusetts. But before we start recording in earnest, is this G-rated or R-rated?
We can go PG-13 if you want.
PG-13? All right.
No full frontal nudity, please.
No. I've even been offered big money not to wear the kilt, so.
All right, go ahead. I'm gonna try to reel this back in. So I mentioned in our introduction that we've got this conference committee that's been set up. But have you heard anything about what's been going on behind closed doors?
No, we don't even know if they've met. We don't even know if they have a schedule, because once everything goes in the conference committee, everything is secret, which to me is just, you know, that's not how we're supposed to operate. I get that sometimes you have to, you know, kind of negotiate privately, but for the most part, that all should be public information. But we also have to remember that anything the House or Senate does, even when they're on the floor for votes, everything happens behind closed doors. You know, the Senate is famous. Matter of fact, they did with this particular bill when they so-called debated it. They were in private caucus for 4 hours before they came out and gave a couple of speeches and voted on it. So We're unfortunately very used to it here, but something's got to give, because it's not just our issue; it's everybody's issues. They're so tired of it, not knowing what's actually happening. So, there are two Republicans on the conference committee. I've talked to both of them, and they're pretty much convinced they're just going to be left out of this, because all they need is a majority, and there's four Democrats. So,
okay,
they don't even know if they'll be part of the negotiations. So the language that's in play is really astronomical. When the Senate finished doing their piece, we took, and it's up on the GOLD website. If you go to GOLD.org/gunban, it's all there. There is basically we put together just bullet points, because you're not going to read paragraphs of, you know, section, chapter, this and that. It's just bullet points or what it could do. So we took everything that the House bill could do and everything that the Senate bill could do by subject matter and put it all together. And it's a lot. It's pages and pages of stuff, even just with bullet points.
Right.
It's a lot. So here we go. A couple of weeks ago, Mike Harris and I, who you've had on the show, sat down and said, you know, people really know how bad it was, but they really don't know how bad the process was. So we actually came up with the idea of, we got the web name processmatters.org. Don't go to .com. You'll go to something else. I'm not sure what it is. Processmatters.org. And we literally did a not a day by day, but started in February of 2000. Actually, we started in June of 2022 because that's July. I'm sorry, right after the Bruin decision in June, and they snuck in an amendment to codify suitability, which the court said you couldn't do, but they snuck it into a technology bill to the point where we got word of it only because a member of the media called us. So we started calling all kinds of reps because it was a House bill. Mm-hmm. And they said, we're not voting on guns today. I says, you better contact your speaker because you are. And it was such a popular bill because it was going to completely revamp the computer systems for the courts en masse, which every legislator had been waiting for. So they intentionally put our amendment, not our amendment, the amendment into a bill they knew that everybody would vote for in the end, regardless if they didn't like that amendment. So anyway, we have basically laid out all of the steps the House, the Senate combined have taken in the last 2 years, and none of it follows the regular rules of the legislative process.
Yeah, this is amazing. I mean, I'm looking at the timeline that you all have laid out here. And, you know, when you talk about, and this isn't just a timeline, by the way, if you go to gold.org/processmatters or processmatters.org, you can see this. October 10th, 2023, for example, the Committee on House Ways and Means holds an illegitimate joint hearing with the House Committee on the Judiciary, cutting the Senate out of the process, right? The House leadership uses sleight of hand and attaches the gun law language to an existing budget bill that's already in the House Ways and Means Committee. House Ways and Means then guts the budget bill to only include the gun language and then uses that as a vehicle to bring the bill up for a vote with no legitimate committee process. Now, that's, again, that's just one small aspect of how these bills have come to be. But, you know, continually, Jim, we've seen this flouting of the rules. And it's not to try to get the bill across the finish line, right? Democrats have a supermajority in both chambers of the legislature. So it's not about that. It really, it's hard to get any other impression other than this is about stopping people like you and Mike and gun owners across the state of Massachusetts from being able to weigh in publicly, from being able to object to this, to articulate why these bills are so bad. They want to silence you. They want to shut you up. They don't want you to be heard.
Yeah, it's amazing. When we launched our assault on the House bill, when that came out in 23, the overwhelming support on our side from the general public, the non-gun owners, really understood how bad that bill was. And you would be basically making this, it's funny. It'd be a gun-free zone for lawful citizens, mm-hmm. but it would be a gun-rich zone for criminals. So, because you have to keep in mind, here they are with this massive piece of legislation that's going to restrict, and it flies in the face of Bruin. But just in the past month or two, the governor, Maura Healey, who we've talked about for years, just announced she's closing down the only prison for men in Massachusetts, complaining that it's only half full. Why do we need it? She also announced that she needs $1 billion to house and feed and pay for the legal fees for the illegal immigrants. She closed down the only rec center in Roxbury, nasty place, that kids have to go to get away from the gangs to house illegals. And then she just announced she's cutting the budget for transition programs from people who are in jail or prison back into public life. So how many steps can you take as a government to not show the general public you're turning this into a crime state?
That is amazing. I got to go back and hit on a couple of these things. So she's closing the only men's prison in the state. Where are male inmates going to do their time if they are convicted and sentenced to prison?
Not a clue. And if I had a little tinfoil hat-ish, I would say that a developer's looking at that property because a very innocuous bill is moving through the process very quietly that will ban hunting on that property. Well, why would you have to file a bill to ban hunting on prison property? Right. And it's But it's gorgeous. And remember where it is, Concord, Mass. Pretty high-end community.
Yeah.
I will bet you dollars to donuts that some developer is looking at that land because it's gorgeous farmland. They have a tremendous agricultural program at the prison where they grow food not only for the prison but for elderly. They have cattle, I think, and other things. So, but I, as far as I know, it's the only prison in Mass for men. Now, we have jails. We have county jails.
Right.
But if you talk to the sheriffs who run those jails, they're way above capacity. And, you know, I don't know what the percentage is, but we've talked to them a lot about let's just pick a number, 50% of the people in jails don't belong there because they have severe mental health issues, but there's no other place to put them.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're going to put hardened criminals. Remember, this is state prison. It's not county jail that they're closing. So now you're going to put hardened prisoners in with these kids that have just made stupid mistakes.
You know, okay, so then, you know, on the backside of that, when folks get done with their sentence, you said she's cutting the funding for transition services?
That's what we've been told, yeah. The media just covered the story maybe a week ago that she wants to cut those services.
That's crazy. I mean, listen, I'm a law and order kind of guy, but if you don't want recidivism, if you don't want to see repeat offenders, then you have to give folks at least a pathway to earn a living legally once they get out of prison and they've done their time, right? And that does require some transition. So that's, you know, it's amazing, Jim. I mean, you know, in some ways this is soft on crime. In some ways this is, I think in many ways it's soft on crime, but at the same time, cracking down on law-abiding gun owners. So what happens to all of these gun owners? You know, you called this House bill the Lawful Citizens Imprisonment Act. I guess they're all going to be housed in the county jails instead of the state prison when more Healy has her way.
The good news is we won't have a prison, so we don't have to worry about it, I guess. So, you know, but I would go one step further. And again, you know, I'm not wearing a tinfoil hat. I'm wearing a Cabela's hat. But this isn't just soft on crime. This is, you know, nurturing crime. Because remember, there's the city of Boston and others have this very long list of misdemeanors that they will no longer prosecute. You know, so shoplifting. I mean, look what's going on in California and other parts of the world where huge stores are closing because they can't get the police to come. And, you know, you look at, I think it's, there's others, but Pittsburgh, I saw it just announced this morning that they're going to start sorting through 911 calls, and there's certain calls they just won't even respond to anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So what the heck is going on? So anyway, just the one piece of it, the legislative process, is completely broken, and post-COVID, by the way. So basically all of the ways they did business during COVID, they've continued to do, but even worse. And that's not only just a legislature. I'll tell you one thing. I had to renew my license. So I walked into a registry of motor vehicles yesterday.
Yeah.
And there was nobody in line. So I said, boy, first time in my life that's ever happened. And they said, oh, sorry, sir, you have to make an appointment to come here. Excuse me, what? Says we do things by appointment only now. I just can't walk in and renew my license anymore. No, sir. It's like, all right. Okay, you know, where do you go from here? But I think everybody, I don't care if you like guns, hate the Second Amendment, whatever, you need to read this, because the next time it could be your civil rights on the line. It, you know, power, as you know, historically power sway, right? Massachusetts, maybe not so much, but in other places. Be careful what authority you give these people. And there's such a super majority here of Democrats in the House and Senate. You know, the Senate has 40 people. There's only 4 Republicans. So there's such a super majority that they can pretty much do whatever they want, and nobody challenges them. Even the Boston Globe wrote about some of this stuff years ago, and they didn't care. They didn't care. So, you know, there you go.
Yeah, well, the citizens should care. You're right, and it shouldn't be a matter of you know, whether or not you're a Second Amendment supporter, because you're right. There will be issues that this will impact, you know, the way these games are played will impact some Democrats at some point, right? Not just gun owning Republicans, not just conservatives, but, you know, even progressives might find themselves on the short end of the stick when the legislature starts playing games like this. Now, what is Gold doing right now as the conference committee is meeting behind closed doors? Obviously, again, you're alerting folks to the twisted process that was used to get to this point. Mm-hmm. But are you gearing up for what happens when they release their legislation, the agreed upon legislation? Because I'm assuming they will come to an agreement here.
We have no idea. We really don't. The House and Senate are so far apart, you know, there's always a chance they won't come to an agreement. Because egos are in the way, which to some extent is fine with me. But once a bill goes to conference committee, if they come out with language that the conferees can agree on, again, a majority of them, then it goes, I believe, to the House first for up or down vote. No more debate, no more amendments. I'm sure they'll give some speech. But other than that, it's just an up or down vote, yes or no. And then it goes to the Senate for the same thing, which I'm sure they'll give some glorified speech about how great they are. And then it's yes or no. And then it goes to the governor's desk. So, matter of fact, I was talking to a former police chief yesterday who's very much involved in teaching the mass gun laws. And he was trying to help on this bill because even law enforcement didn't like it. Mm-hmm. It said, well, you know, the grandfathering date's a big problem because you're going all the way back to 2016. And the senator told him, well, we're not going to put an emergency preamble in this. So that means everybody will have 90 days to get rid of their guns. Yeah. Yeah, that's going to happen.
What guns are they talking about? So-called assault weapons?
Well, you got to remember now, both bills are vastly different, but one thing they're different in is that they will now include an unfinished receiver or frame to be a gun. Unfinished. They didn't say 80%. They just said unfinished. What's that mean? Okay. So literally, if you look at the logic chain of this, an unfinished receiver for, let's say, an AR, mm-hmm. will legally be considered an unfinished machine gun because that receiver, once finished, could fit an M16. Yeah.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, Jim, and say that if they come to an agreement, it's going to be bad for gun owners. I mean, there's no way that this that either the Senate bill or the House bill gets turned into something that is going to be acceptable or even constitutional, quite frankly, for that matter.
Yeah. The Senate bill, even though I love it when they say, well, Jim, the Senate bill was much better than the House bill. Yeah, but that's like saying you had one leg amputated versus two legs amputated. You know?
Right.
And I even talked to my friends in the Senate going, you know, you're trying to sell me a bill of goods here, but if you just looked at the Senate bill as a standalone bill, it's horrible. One of the things they did worse in the Senate bill was the industry language. It would literally make you and I, any member of the Second Amendment community, a member of the firearms industry. And anyone who made a product for us, a sticker, a goal sticker, would be a firearm industry product. And you know why they did that? Because even though it's in violation of federal law, they are reintroducing liability to manufacturers and members of the firearm industry. So if somebody could prove harm, and what's harm these days, right?
Right.
We don't know what harm is. Somebody's triggered, they can prove harm. Then they can file a lawsuit against you, which would open up the entire Second Amendment community and all the people we do business with. Kind of reminds you a little bit of that thing they did in New York, you know, that there's a First Amendment case now for the NRA, that if you do business with gun owners, And that's exactly what this language would do. And they, oh, no, no, no. We're just trying to open the doors up to, yeah, we know what you're doing. It's in violation of federal law. Frivolous lawsuits are in violation. So here we go. But there's a lot of historical stuff in this, in both of them, actually, that are going to be incredibly problematic. And we, it's kind of interesting. I don't know if you ever saw the video of me testifying in that bogus hearing. At the end of it, I said, listen, you pass this, we're tapping out. And afterwards, the media is coming up to me. And what do you mean you're tapping out? We're done. 25 years, we've been educating gun owners on these ridiculous laws we have now. We've been telling everybody, follow the laws to the best of your ability. You pass this, we're tapping out. No more. My message to gun owners will be, do whatever you have to do to keep your family safe. Because look what the governor's doing. She's turning us into a crime state. You're going to need those guns. So pass this. Go ahead. We're done. And it's kind of interesting. So,
yeah, it is. Well, listen, we're going to be watching closely to see what comes out of this conference committee whenever it happens. In the meantime, again, I'd encourage folks to check out processmatters.org. See for yourself this timeline of all of the shady actions from the legislature here in terms of infringing on your right to keep and bear arms. And Jim Wallace, until you tap out, I want to thank you once again for staying in the fight and working to protect and preserve. Well, working to protect and restore the right to keep and bear arms in the state of Massachusetts. I think we've got a way to go before it's secure. Right now, you're just trying to claw back the rights that have been taken away.
Yeah, we are definitely behind enemy lines. But, you know, I'm Scottish. We like those kind of challenges.
Well, thanks for keeping your kilt down over the course of this interview. And look forward to talking to you again very soon, my friend.
I can.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate Jim joining us on the program today. Now, I did do a little bit of research, and it turns out that prison in Concord is not the only men's prison in the state of Massachusetts. It is one of just a couple of medium security prisons, however. Most of the other facilities are minimum security pre-release facilities. There is, I believe, one maximum security prison in Massachusetts. But you've already got, you know, corrections officers who are saying, despite Maura Healey's contention that, well, you know, this prison in Concord is only 50% full, they're saying, look, we've got overcrowding in our facilities, and shutting this prison down is going to make matters worse. So the bad news is that there will still be space to house gun owners if, you know, this gun control bill passes. The good news, I guess, is that, yeah, there might be some space for violent criminals even if this prison gets shuttered. But still not a good move on the part of the governor, going easy on criminals, cracking down on those exercising their Second Amendment rights. Let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there. Not necessarily a recidivist report, but definitely a crime trend here. The U.S. Postal Service and the Letter Carriers Union warning that the courts are not taking postal crime seriously after a letter carrier who was robbed at gunpoint in San Francisco. Well, the assailant got just a 30-day sentence. Now, this is a crime that is punishable by up to 10 years in federal prison, but that didn't happen in San Francisco. And around the country, we are seeing more of these types of robberies. According to the U.S. Postal Inspection Service, postal carrier robberies jumped 30% last year. 643 reported around the country. The number of robberies resulting in injuries doubled from about 30 in 2022 to 61 in 2023. These numbers are going the wrong way. And again, you've got a court system that is taking these crimes lightly. You got to start to wonder, what can we do to protect these postal workers? Louis DeJoy is the Postmaster General. Put out a statement saying this sends a concerning message of encouragement, talking about that 30-day sentence, a concerning message of encouragement to our nation's criminals and a message of disregard to our loyal public servants who deserve better protection and reassurance that the law will take crimes against them seriously. America's postal workers are entitled to feel protected as they go about their public service mission and at a minimum should be able to take solace in knowing that the law protects them against crime as they perform their duties and that any such crimes will be taken seriously by the courts. Well, here's a suggestion. If the courts aren't taking these crimes seriously, and these postal workers have a right to not just feel protected, but to be safe on the job, why don't we allow these postal workers to start carrying firearms when they're on the clock? Now, I'm not talking about giving them law enforcement powers. I'm not talking about, you know, adding tens of thousands of postal inspectors to the Postal Service. I'm just talking about if you are a letter carrier and you have a concealed carry license, you should be able to carry it with you on your route so that if you are robbed, if your life is threatened, you don't just have the right to defend yourself, but you have the ability to defend yourself. You have the means to protect your life so you can make it home at the end of your shift. Now, I realize how controversial this would be for our anti-gun friends around the country, but honestly, what is the real issue here? If you've got folks who are lawful citizens, they have a license to carry, or they live in a state in which, again, constitutional carry applies and there's no license that's needed, why should lawful gun owners not be able to exercise their Second Amendment rights when they are on the clock, knowing that they are increasingly the targets of violent criminals? It's not like we have enough police to provide every postal worker with a bodyguard when they're walking their routes or driving their routes, right? No, it's up to them. Their safety is ultimately their responsibility. And if they're increasingly becoming the targets and the courts aren't taking these things seriously, I'd love to see Republicans in Congress introduce a bill that would allow lawful gun owners working in the Postal Service to carry their guns with them when they're out on their route, so that if they are the target of a violent criminal, they can fight back and they can make it home safely at the end of their shift. Now, turning to today's Armed Citizen story from Idaho, where sheriff's deputies report that an elderly woman who was injured in a home invasion is expected to survive. The home intruder, on the other hand, well, he was shot and killed by the armed citizen. Don't have a lot of information here. This happened in Bingham County, Idaho, about 12:15 Wednesday afternoon. It's a broad daylight, but a pretty rural area. Bingham County Chief Deputy Jordan Nebaker spoke to EastIdahoNews.com, confirmed that the woman shot a man with a handgun. A release from the Sheriff's Department says the suspect of the home invasion was an adult male and was deceased upon our arrival. The Sheriff's Department also said that the homeowner, the armed citizen, was harmed but was able to protect herself in this attack. Again, we don't know if there was any relationship between the victim in this case and the perpetrator. Don't know if they knew each other. Don't know what the perp might have been after, if this was just some, you know, random encounter. But what we do know is that thankfully this woman was not seriously harmed. She is expected to survive her injuries. And again, she was able to protect her life thanks to the fact that she had a firearm. We will hopefully be able to give you some more details in coming days here. We'll keep an eye out for any updates. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, will enable to do the right thing. A student at Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, who is out for breakfast in Chesterfield, Virginia, a Richmond suburb, when she had the opportunity to intervene and to save a life. A husband and wife had just walked into the Eggs Up Grill in Chesterfield and had sat down. Apparently, they had just come from the hospital, according to Rob Thompson, who is the owner of the restaurant. And as they're sitting there, the woman just collapses. Apparently, had gone into cardiac arrest, but nobody knew that at the time. They just knew that she fell over. Thompson says, one of our patrons sitting two tables over jumped up, called 911. When our servers were on 911, we're trying to get paramedics here. At that point, she stops breathing. And that was the moment in which Nyla Harris stepped up and saved the day, quite literally. Rob Thompson saw Nyla Harris get up from her booth, start to perform CPR on the woman. She did start to breathe. She recovered her breath. But in the chaos of the moment, Thompson said he never got Nyla Harris's name. So this past weekend, he posted on social media what happened, had a picture, and shared it and said, does anybody recognize who this woman is? He said within 45 minutes, one of my other locations, somebody posted the mom's name. And that's how Thompson was able to track Nyla Harris down. Nyla Harris spoke to Channel 12 News in Richmond and said he said she heard the woman's husband say she wasn't breathing. He said, that's when I kicked in and I pulled her out from under the booth and I started compressions. She said, what really hit me was when the husband was saying, she's gone. She's already gone. And I said, no, she's not gone. We're going to get her back. And that's exactly what she did. For her actions, Rob Thompson with the Eggs Up Grill is giving Nyla Harris free breakfast for a year, which is pretty cool. I don't think that's why she acted, but, it's a nice little bonus. Thompson said, I just want to tell her how thankful we are. And I know that the couple is so very thankful that she saved their life. And we're just amazed at how quick she jumped into action and did it without a thought. She absolutely saved her life. Thompson said he was so inspired by what Nyla Harris did that he reached out to the Red Cross. He is now going to make sure that every staff member at Eggs Up Grill, he's got more than one location, that they're all going to be certified in CPR, which I think is an outstanding move. And again, probably wouldn't have happened if it weren't for the life-saving actions of Nyla Harris. So not only her actions, but now inspiring Rob Thompson to ensure that others might be able to take those same life-saving steps if needed in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Nyla Harris from Richmond, Virginia, we thank you for your very, very good deed. Now, that is about all the time we've got for you on this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program. As always, looking forward to seeing you again on Monday. We'll be talking with Holly Sullivan from the Connecticut Citizens Defense League. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com. Between now and then, we're keeping the website up to date with all of the latest Second Amendment news and information. And if you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member. All you have to do, go to BearingArms.com/subscribe, use the promo code GUNRIGHTS, and you can get a significant savings on your VIP membership. You can also use the promo code SAVEAMERICA to get that same significant discount. As Arif is saying, thanks for showing your support. We're going to give you exclusive content you won't find anywhere else because your support really does matter. And it truly does make a difference. So thank you again. Enjoy the next couple of days until we talk again. Be well. Be safe. And be free.